This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Residents in the city of Christchurch, New Zealand, are planning a major vigil Thursday, although several community-driven memorials have been erected already. Meanwhile, Australian Britton Tarrant, the man accused of killing 50 people at two mosques there and wounding dozens more, has reportedly fired his lawyer and plans to represent himself. The self-described fascist and white supremacist has been charged with murder. His family has been speaking out. On Australia's Channel 9, Marie Fitzgerald says she's Tarrant's grandmother, and it's hard to accept that someone in their family would do something like this.
It's only since he travelled overseas, I think, that that boy has changed completely to the boy we knew.
In the U.S., there was reaction to the mention of President Trump's and Tarrant's manifesto. On ABC's This Week, former Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson says national leaders have to tone down divisive rhetoric.
Americans do listen to their leaders. And so as we enter this election season, I believe that the voters should demand that a prerequisite for office, for political office, is that our leaders adopt a more civil tone in what they say.
But on Fox News Sunday, acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney says that the suspect made clear in his manifesto that he is not a supporter of President Trump's policies.
This was a disturbed individual, an evil person, and to try and tie him to an American politician of either party probably ignores some of the deeper difficulties that this sort of activity exposes.
Meanwhile, 7 months after the U.S. Senator John McCain died from brain cancer, President Trump, in a trio of Twitter comments Saturday and Sunday, contended the Republican lawmaker helped instigate Special Counsel Robert Mueller's long-running investigation of links between Trump's 2016 election campaign and Russia. This is VOA News. Reuters' Lucy Fielder explains that families of victims of last week's Ethiopian Airlines crash held symbolic burials for the victims, and new details about the crash are emerging.
Ethiopian Airlines says it could take up to 6 months to do DNA testing on the remains of the 157 people who perished on board Flight 302 a week ago. This friend of deceased cabin crew Getachew Negatu hopes the ceremony brings closure for the husband and baby she left behind. Meanwhile, details are emerging from the examination of the black box recorders from the crashed Boeing 737 MAX 8. A source that has listened to the air traffic control recording told Reuters it was travelling at an unusually high speed after takeoff. A voice from the cockpit made a request to increase altitude. But then the pilot, who sounded terrified, mentioned a flight control problem and started to make a right turn to return to the airport. The plane then vanished off the radar.
Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting. More than 150 people were killed and hundreds more missing Sunday after a cyclone swept through southeastern Africa. The United Nations estimate more than 1.5 million people in Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe were affected by that storm. Tens of thousands have been cut off from roads and telephones in mainly poor rural areas. The cyclone made landfall Thursday near the coastal city of Beira, Mozambique, with winds of nearly 200 kilometers per hour. The storm then moved west into Malawi and Zimbabwe. The UN said about 122 people had died in Mozambique and Malawi. Zimbabwean officials on Sunday confirmed 65 deaths. Israel's Supreme Court Sunday disqualified an extreme right-wing politician from next month's parliamentary election for inciting violence and racism against Arabs. The Israeli Election Committee had given permission for Michael Ben-Ari of Jewish Power Party to run. But the court Sunday backed a legal challenge by the opposition leftist Meretz Party, which argued that Ben-Ari called for violence against Arabs, denying them civil rights and incited racism. Ben-Ari condemned the court decision, saying a judicial junta is trying to impose its laws and it's not democracy. The court ruled, however, that another Jewish power candidate can run. It also overturned an election commission decision to bar candidates from two Arab parties. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 18th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyans take away soil from the site of the Ethiopian Airlines crash instead of the remains of their loved ones.
Those nobodies recovered. What was recovered was very fragmented. So the only form of identification available is by DNA.
Catherine Mwangi is Kenya's ambassador to Ethiopia. Violent protests in Kinshasa as President Tshisekedi's ruling party loses a Senate seat. We'll talk with a candidate from former President Kabila's party who also lost his race. Official campaigning for Malawi's mayor election begins tomorrow, Tuesday. We'll speak with the main opposition candidate. And Cyclone Ida kills more than 150 people as Zimbabwe president cuts short his foreign travel.
The president did not anticipate, like everyone else, the amount of catastrophe and tragedy that was like Zimbabwe. But the moment he was made aware that this is what has happened, he cut a lot of engagements that he had, and he's on his way back to come and lead the relief effort.
Nick Magwana is press secretary in the Zimbabwe Ministry of Information. And Guinea-Bissau women reflect on their participation in the March 10 parliamentary elections. Those the report Samson O'Malley's Post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A preliminary analysis of the black box of Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 shows clear similarities to a crash of the same model plane in Indonesia last year. Ethiopia's Transport Minister, Dagman Wait Mongit, told reporters on Sunday that a preliminary report on last week's crash, which left 157 people dead, would be released within 30 days. Meanwhile, funerals were held Sunday for the 17 Ethiopians killed in the crash. In another development, Kenyan authorities said Sunday that the number of Kenyan citizens who died in the Ethiopian plane crash last week has risen to 36. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the families of Kenyan victims were given soil from the site of the Ethiopian Airlines crash for burial instead of the remains of their loved ones.
It has been a week of tears from the families of the victims who perished in the crash of Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302 that was en route to Nairobi 1 week ago. Addressing the families of victims yesterday Sunday in Ethiopia, the Kenyan ambassador to Ethiopia, Catherine Mwangi, said that it was very difficult to identify the bodies of the victims because they were burnt beyond recognition. She also said identifying the remains through DNA will take up to 6 months.
Those nobodies recovered. What was recovered was very fragmented body parts. And these, we have been told, total up to anything over 5,000 pieces. So the only form of identification available is by DNA. So families who've been there, we have been told the process is complicated, it is long, so this is likely to take up to even 6 months.
The families have collected soil from the accident scene to bury in place of their loved ones. Mwangi says a total of 36 Kenyans died in the crash as four more Kenyan victims were identified to have traveled but on the passport of other countries.
Just first of all to clarify that, as you remember, the number of casualties of Kenyan descent had been at 32, but this changed because some Kenyans were traveling on other nationality passports. So it has turned out that the total number of fatalities from Kenya is 36.
Faisal Hussein, whose father Hussein Swale, a former Secretary General of the Federation of Kenya Football, was among the 157 victims, told VOA that the family has already conducted prayers for his father and they are now waiting for the DNA test results.
In line with our Islamic principles, we are hopeful that I'll travel to Addis on Tuesday and by Thursday I'll be back with some remains at least for our internment and also burial rites in Emba. And from the debris that we saw, started dawning on us that probably the remains definitely they were highly fragmented and it won't be viable for them to transport the remains to Kenya.
Details have emerged that Ethiopian Airlines is planning to compensate victims of the ill-fated Boeing 737 MAX 8 plane crash. Families of the victims will receive between $170,000 and $250,000 for each person lost. Meanwhile, Ethiopia's transport ministry officials said Sunday that information from the flight data recorded on Ethiopian Airline Flight 302 clear similarities with the same type of plane that crashed last October in Indonesia. Ethiopian Transport Minister Dagmawit Moges told journalists Sunday that black box of Ethiopian Airline Flight 302 was in good condition, but it would take investigators about 30 days to come up with a preliminary report. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
More than 150 people were killed and hundreds more missing on Sunday after Cyclone Ida swept through Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe. The United Nations estimates more than 1.5 million people were affected by the storm. Tens of thousands have been cut off from roads and telephones in mainly poor rural areas. Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa has been forced to cut short his visit to the United Arab Emirates to attend to the effects of the tropical cyclone Ida. The president had been criticized for flying out of the country in the face of a crisis. Nick Magwana is permanent secretary in the Zimbabwe Ministry of Information.
The president did not anticipate, like everyone else, the amount of catastrophe and tragedy that was striking Zimbabwe. But the moment he was made aware that this is what has happened, he changed his program. He cut a lot of engagements that he had, and he shortened his journey. He also changed the context of his engagement and sought international relief. He has managed to mobilize and marshal a lot of relief, which he shall bring to Zimbabwe. And he's on his way back to come and lead the relief effort, to come and give leadership and direction to the relief effort.
There are some in international organizations as well as local ones who might want to help. What exactly is the government of Zimbabwe looking for?
The government is literally looking for everything. Anything anybody can contribute. Medication is important. We have some doctors from Medicine Frontier together now with the Provincial Medical Directorate. They mobilize the medication. They are trying to get it on site. But anything from clothes, blankets, tents, water bottles, food is very key as well. Anything can bring relief to the people that have lost anything, be appreciated.
We also understand that the government of Zimbabwe has mobilized the Air Force of Zimbabwe. Are they able to fly to some affected areas like Chimanimani, for example?
Eventually today, when the weather conditions became a bit better, the Air Force of Zimbabwe managed to fly to Ground Zero, if we may use your American language. So they managed to fly there. They picked a few people that were injured, but now they are on site, but they can't fly out because the visibility has deteriorated.
Nick Magwana is permanent secretary in the Zimbabwe Ministry of Information. He spoke with VOA Zimbabwe service reporter Blessing Zulu from the capital, Harare. Today is Monday, March 18th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. Official campaigning for Malawi's May 21st presidential and parliamentary elections begins tomorrow, Tuesday. As many as 25 candidates are trying to unseat incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika, who is seeking re-election. Today, Monday, former President Joyce Banda of the People's Party, who quit the race last week, will officially announce her endorsement of Lazarus Chakwera, presidential candidate of the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. Chakwera tells me his party is ready for the campaign.
We are the only party that has so far launched a manifesto, and we are looking forward officially beginning to campaign. We've been more than ready.
Are you confident about the way the election itself is being planned by the Election Commission?
All things being equal, this is the best we have as a team, and the Electoral Commission is doing its best. We have confidence in its ability to deliver a free and fair election. everything that we have been able to raise with the commission, they respond well. We may not be 100% satisfied, but we're satisfied enough. This is the only commission that's ready to run the election, and so we're ready.
It is difficult sometimes to defeat an incumbent. What do you think are your chances with President Mutharika?
Well, you must remember that when he won against an incumbent, if that is anything to go by.
There was news last week that former President Joyce Banda, her party, was to join with your party for a coalition. Can you tell us, please, how you think this news?
It's been well received, and she has endorsed me. She's going to officially tell the nation herself tomorrow.
Your party is one of the biggest parties in Malawi, but some people say the former president, she had tried before to align herself with another group, but it did not work out. Are you sure that this time around it's going to work?
You will have to ask that question to her, but she has assured us, and this is going to work because she's already withdrawn her candidature because she felt confident that we are the ones to support.
I want you to comment, please. The Cyclone Ida, the report we are getting is that Cyclone Ida has killed many people. Malawi was already suffering from flood. And many people die in Malawi because of the floods. You are in the countryside. What are you seeing?
There's a whole lot of devastation, particularly in the south. I'm just coming from there. However, the Malawian people are resilient. We have lost some people, lost property. However, they are going on, and they are just looking forward to a new day despite the devastation.
Again, you said that your party is ready for campaigning when it starts officially on Tuesday.
Yes, sir, and we're very confident that we're ready and steady.
Thank you very much, sir. It's so nice to speak with you.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you.
Lazarus Chakwera is the presidential candidate of the Malawi Congress Party. You're speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, at least one police officer was reportedly killed during violent protests in the capital, Kinshasa, after President Felix Tshisekedi's ruling party lost badly in Friday's senatorial election. The violence took place outside the headquarters of the ruling Union for Democracy and Social Progress, UDPS, party, as activists were said to be angry over the party's failure to get a Senate seat. Former President Joseph Kabila's coalition controls the National Assembly, the Provincial Assembly, and won 84 of the 100 seats in the Senate. But Andre Atundu, former spokesman of former President Kabila's coalition, says he lost his bid for the Senate because of corruption.
For me, I'm not happy, not because I lost, but because of corruption. Some member of Provincial Assembly asked a lot of money to be elected by them, about $50,000, $30,000. And I say, I cannot give this amount, so you choose me if you want. If you don't, I don't mind. I think my position was the root of my electoral defeat. Anyhow, I wrote to the procurator to denounce this practice.
So who offered this $50,000? I mean, was this $50,000 being offered to the voters?
No. The voters asked for this amount. If you want to be voted, they ask to give at least $10,000. So I didn't accept. That's why I think this is one of the causes of my defeat.
You were spokesperson for former President Kabila's Common Front for Congo FCC coalition. Where do you think this practice comes from? It must have happened during President Kabila's term.
I don't know, but I know that President Kabila and after him, President Tshisekedi, talked about changing how to choose the senator. They were thinking of go to direct election and to leave this election by the members of provincial assembly because of this case of corruption.
what do you make of the reports coming out of Kinshasa that at least one police officer was killed during violent protests in Kinshasa because President Félix Tshisekedi's Union for Democracy and Social Progress Party failed to win a Senate seat?
I know that the presidential party, UDPS, protests because they got no senators, but I'm not aware of the death of this policy.
Even though you did not win your Senate seat, you must still be happy because former President Kabila's coalition has won the majority in the National Assembly, the provincial assemblies, and 84 out of 100 seats in the Senate. This must still be good news for the party.
Yes, the majority of our coalition is good news. But the corruption is bad news because it touches to the dignity, to the credibility of the members of the provincial assembly. Anyhow, for President Kabila coalition, it's logical because it means that he worked very hard to have such a result. But unfortunately, we are also victim of these corruptions act.
You mentioned the $50,000. Is this being paid to a whole village or this $50,000 goes to one voter?
One voter. Some voters ask for $30,000. So if you need $5 to become senator, you have to pay $150,000. That's unacceptable.
Do you mean U.S. dollars or Congolese dollars?
In Congolese, there's no dollar. U.S. dollar.
But that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, even for me.
Is it the Elections Commission that you have a complaint to? And do you think anything can be done to deal with this corruption?
I complained to the provincial court, and I'm waiting for their response and the aftermath of my action. I complained Saturday, and I hope that Monday or Tuesday I will have the response.
Mr. Atundu, thank you very much. We'll be in touch with you always. Thank you for speaking with us.
Yes, James. Thank you, and have a good day.
Andre Alain Atundu is the former spokesman for former DRC President Joseph Kabila's coalition. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. This month's parliamentary elections were supposed to mark a forward step for women's rights in Guinea-Bissau. A new law requiring that 36% of the candidates be women met more women, ran more than ever before. But the parties listed those women at the bottom of their rolls. After election, only 14 women were elected from 102 seats available. Susie Barbosa is the deputy and women's rights activist. She talks to Ricky Stryak about how the low numbers, even after the new law.
Like in my party, we had 8 women had the list, myself included. And this time, all the how things happened, most of us women got elected exactly because we were at the list. This is what I spoke the most about. Why? Because I said we should have a sequence of gender, one man, one woman. Because this time, most of the party that got elected in a circumscription, they didn't have more than 2 mandates. So what happened is, if they didn't have women either in the first or second place, they wouldn't be able to be elected.
I know the parity law passed, and that's good, but it's obvious with these results that it's not strong enough, it's not powerful enough. So do you think you will pursue something?
When we first voted the parity law, we voted for a law that should be gender incidence, like one man, one woman, or one woman, one man. The project was worked in specialization. Decided that, no, it shouldn't be like that. Why? Because the party that wanted this was PRGC, and we presented this with the civil society. But that commission was a commission run by PRS, and they decided they could not accept that. So what they did is that they changed that. They said, no, women can be there, but they don't have to be head of list. They just have to be on the list. It doesn't matter in which place. So at the end, we were forced to vote like this.
Will you pursue strengthening the parity law? Will you pursue changes to it in the next session?
Yes, I will.
What changes will you pursue?
I think this law, unless we really put a position for women, they have to be a maximum till the second place of the list. If you don't do that, they will always be on the list, but on the last places. Because most of the parties, they choose men to be on the list because of a financial problem. Most of the women, we don't have financial support. So they choose head of list men that have money to finance the campaign. Because most of the political parties, they don't have enough money for the campaign. So they choose the strongest men on the party to put them heads of list in order for them to finance their own campaigns.
You know, for someone who doesn't understand this, why is it important to have more women?
That was Susie Barbosa, a deputy in Guinea-Bissau's parliament. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bissau. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the results from two of Africa leading club football competition, which was played across various venues this past weekend. In the CAF Champions League, North African giants Wydad Casablanca and Al Ahly secured safe passage into the quarterfinals of the CAF Champions League, while South Africa's Orlando Pirates have crashed out following the completion of the group phase on Saturday. Tanzanian club Simba SC beat former winners AS Vita Club of DR Congo 2-1 in Dar es Salaam on Saturday to reach the quarterfinals. DR Congo's TP Mazembe continued with their quest for the trophy with a 2-0 win over CS Constantine of Algeria, who progressed despite the defeat. Horoya of Guinea made sure of their place in the quarterfinals from Group B thanks to a 2-1 win over South Africa's Orlando Pirates, while Nigeria's Lobi Stars ended their campaign with a 2-0 win over Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosas in Enugu. Both clubs were eliminated. The draws for the quarterfinals will take place in Cairo on Wednesday. In the CAF Confederations Cup, holders Raja Casablanca went out of the African Confederations Cup despite convincing winning their final group game away from home. Raja Casablanca began the day bottom of the standings after managing just four draws and one defeat in their previous five group games. In Group B, Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel ensured the progress to the quarterfinals with their compatriots CS Sfaxien thanks to a 1-0 home win over Burkina Faso's Zalitas. Elsewhere, Sudan's Al Hilal went through after a 4-1 win over Zambia's Nkana in Omdurman. In Group D, Kenya's Gor Mahia managed to go from bottom to second place thanks to a 1-0 win over Angola's Petro Atletico at the Moi International Sports Center on Sunday. The results saw Gor Mahia finish second in Group D with 9 points, qualifying for the CAF Confederations Cup quarterfinals as they tied on points with first place Zamalek, who drew 0-0 with Hussein Dey in the other group March. And now to athletics news. Billy Tilahun of Ethiopia and Jocelyn Jepkosgei of Kenya won their New York City racing debut in the New York City Half Marathon on Sunday. The 24-year-old Tilahun completed the 21.1-kilometer course through Brooklyn and Manhattan in 1 hour, 2 minutes and 10 seconds, overtaking Eritrea's Daniel Mesfun, who led for the majority of the race but finished 6 seconds behind. Jepkosgei, the world record holder in the half marathon, won her first ever solo race in the United States in 1 hour, 10 minutes, 7 seconds. Mary Ngungi, also of Kenya, finished 1 minute later in second place. Elsewhere in China, Kenya's Mutwike Murimi and Kiprok Jepkosgei claimed the men's and women's titles respectively at the 2019 One Rural Marathon in China's Hubei province on Sunday. Murimi won the men's race by 2 hours, 24 minutes and 4 seconds. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, March 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you a good day.
It's the weekend, and you deserve something special. I've got just the thing, Pan-African music, with me, Heather Maxwell. Hello, everybody. You'll hear two great interviews. One features my recent visit to the Bizung School of Music and Dance in Tamale, Ghana, with Mohamed Alidu and his music students.
And the other comes out of Nairobi. Bill Odidi talks with veteran dance hall artist Red Sun about his new album and his old hits, too.
My name is Red Sun, the baddest Mr. Badder Than, Mr. Shoulderback, Mr. Wine Fimi, me, born and raised a Kenyan.
Song of the Week features the hit song Lepe Mala, currently tearing up the airwaves in Ethiopia. And there's so much more awesome music, people, you just don't want to miss it. So, sweeten up with me on Music Time in Africa, this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC.